All right, here we go. Quiet!
Quiet! Quiet!
Roll them!
Hello and welcome to the Big Picture Podcast, where we take a look at the latest movie news, the films of yesterday and today, and try to make it all make some kind of sense. Seated across the microphone from me is Film Buff Online contributing editor, Natasha Bogutsky.
I'm awake now. And seated across the microphone from me, as always, you know his voice, you know his energy. It's Film Buff Online editor-in-chief, Rich Dries.
Hey!
And you see, that's how you do it, Rich.
Okay, fine.
You put some inflection in there.
Hey! That's right.
You sound like a radio announcer sometimes.
I know. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I get in a little professional business. Anyways, I'm in a good mood. We just came from a movie that I was been looking forward to for 2.5 years. Tried to manage my expectations going in, but...
Oh, please. I saw the freaking tears in your eyes. Someone else heard you blubbering. You were in love. And it's okay to admit it. I'm actually kind of proud. And I love that you have something that you love as much as Superman.
Yes, we have literally just walked out of the theater, hopped in our cars, and raced over to my apartment to record this from seeing the Amazon fans advanced screening of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Which is opening this week. I'm excited to talk about this, but first, I think we need to...
Is there any news?
No, there's no news. We don't need to get into news right now. I think the thing we need to talk about, though, is you are not a Superman fan in general.
No, I am not.
Explain yourself. I know we've had this discussion, but to get it on record.
One, I find he's a little too Boy Scout, and most times I found the movies boring as fuck.
Okay.
Particularly, and I know that this is a hot take, the OG Christopher Reeves. I will admit, though, the transformation sequence when he takes off his glasses, it's so subtle, it's beautiful, and I love that one moment to pieces, and the rest of the movie can go fuck itself.
Wow, Jesus. You are coming in hot and cranky.
I got hot takes here.
I know. Now, what is your initial thumbs up, thumbs down reaction to?
Thumbs up.
To James Gunn's film.
I'm giving this a thumbs up.
Okay.
I love being able to say, and I've been able to say this for the last two iterations of Superman, I knew the actors who were getting the big roles before they got these big roles.
Mm-hmm.
And it is nice every now and then to see an upcoming actor years before their break and go, this person is going places. You can just fucking see it. There's something around them and you're like, God, I can't wait. With me, Henry Cavill, I mean, yeah, I grew up with him, kind of Mind Crystal and all that. It was the Tudors. And this is another hot take. That was the first time I really saw that man truly acting his ass off, and it was the last time as well.
I'm not going to disagree with you about him not having anything to do in the Superman movies, if that's what you mean.
No, I mean since.
Oh, wow. Okay.
hasn't had as meaty of a role since the Tudors that really showed full fucking range. He fell into movie stardom, and that's okay, but I could see that aura around him of, I have a star in me, and his charisma was just off the chart, and I was just like, I know that this guy's going to be big.
Yeah. So and that also might be a case of, on the Tudors, he had a lot more room, he had a lot more runway to, you know, play a character and explore that character, whereas the longest movie he was in... he had like maybe 5-6 hours between all of his screen time in the 3 Zack Snyder Superman, Batman v Superman, it's a Justice League thing.
When you get a chance, look up his filmography since Man of Steel. It's a lot of action work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of comedy work. Uh-huh. He hasn't had a drama since the Tudors.
Okay. So I...
And there's fantasy work too, but I mean serious drama work. That being said, also here, David Cornsweet. Man, that man's got range. I fucking loved Hollywood, the Ryan Murphy TV show during that came out during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. It kind of was there and then it slipped underneath everyone's radar. As a film fan, I am legitimately angry at you that you have not watched the show. As a film fan.
As somebody who is not a fan of Ryan Murphy's work, though.
It's mostly...
That's kind of why I avoided it.
You need to watch this.
Okay. I know.
As a film fan, being on the back lots, seeing how motion pictures are made from behind the scenes, hearing about Hattie McDaniel, hearing about the woman who jumped from the Hollywood sign, all of that history mm-hmm. is in this story. And man, I mean, you get some great performances across the board and fantastic writing.
As a film person yourself, can you promise me that if I watch Hollywood within the next 2 months, you watch The Studio?
Very well.
Okay. Okay, there we are.
Fuck, I gotta get Apple TV now. I don't have... That's the one streaming service I don't have.
Come over here and watch it.
But no, he is fantastic in that. And then you get to see range from him again in Pearl, which is a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like watching those going, this guy's going somewhere. I can see it. He's got that same look. He's got that same energy around him. And so when he was cast as this and then Rachel Brosnahan cast opposite him as Lois Lane, I was like, that is... Yeah. I'm in.
Well, then let's start with that. Their chemistry. I mean,
fantastic.
Yes.
He goes up, she goes down. She goes up, he goes down. There is a beautiful back and forth. I think the interview sequence is one of my favorite scenes in the entire film.
And they released a edited portion of that a little while ago. And it was nicer to see that bigger scene having more room to breathe, have more energy up and downs, and it was just fantastic.
And it's great writing, and it poses a very interesting question, I think, about the use of Superman's bias towards his own powers and his own, dare I say, ego in this situation, that because he is so tunnel vision about saving lives, he doesn't take into consideration boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't take into consideration hearsay or, you know, the ramifications and consequences geopolitically of his own actions because is he above it all? And I like that she poses those questions to him.
And he's trying to figure it out as he goes. And I think that's part of the theme of the overall movie is that we all just try to do our best with what we're given. And, you know, and this is a question that's kind of been discussed and re-asked over and over again in various runs of various Superman comics as well. You know, does he stand for truth, justice, and the American way, or truth and justice for all?
I didn't watch a lot of the animated stuff, the TV shows. I've read very few of the comics. I'm only basing what I see off of just live action films.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
And we see a bit of it in Man of Steel where, yes, it's posed by the people and it's posed by the government about the powers of Superman and how far someone with that kind of power would go and how long it would take them to turn on everyone else. Question, to my knowledge, if I remember correctly, because it's been a long time since I watched the Christopher Reeve movies, at least, Lois has never really gone there with that.
No, she's never been the one to kind of push on that.
Fucking love that.
Yeah, I think she's actually the best one.
He's the only one he'd probably listen to.
And she knows him better than probably anybody else outside of his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure exactly where along the relationship arc. I mean, they're 3 months in dating. He's already told her that, yes, Clark, hi, by the way, I'm also Superman.
And I love that we don't find out how that happened. Mm-hmm. We don't see any origin. Yeah. I don't like... It's been done.
Well, you don't need it at this point. It's, there's like
everyone knows
three
how
or four characters you don't need to do the origin story of. Superman.
Batman.
Batman. Spider-Man. You can get away with it. Wonder Woman, maybe.
Nah, not Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay.
Because there hasn't been enough Wonder Woman content outside of the TV show and the Gal Gadot movies.
Mm-hmm.
So having that backstory, yeah. I mean, is kind of important, okay. Integral.
Well, to speak to that, though, that we don't get, you know, the origin story, although there are little moments here and there that call back to it.
Mm-hmm.
I like, and this is something I've been saying since I kind of been watching the production, the announcements about what, you know, what characters are going to be there. And what James Gunn was saying, that we're not going to do the origin. We're going to start 3 years into his career as Superman. And I got the feeling, and it played out tonight in front of my eyes. This is kind of like if you're just a kid, you pick up a comic, it's your first Superman comic, and you're just kind of thrown into this world.
And you got to figure it out as you go.
And you figure it out as you go. And,
okay, I'm okay with that.
And it was fun. You know, as a kid, I loved that stuff, man. When they would have like little editor's notes at the bottom of pages going, oh yeah, this happened in, you know,
issue
25 through 27. Go, you know, good luck finding them. You know, stuff like that. Or, you know, oh, he's referring to the Superman of Earth 2. You know, and all this stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's all this great mythology here. And trying to piece it all together was always so much fun as a kid. And, I mean, they kind of do that here. You know, Guy Gardner throws out, I'm an intergalactic cop, basically, you know. And
so what you're saying is it's one piece out of a very big puzzle. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to go ahead and try to figure out how all the pieces work to see the big picture.
I think we'll be getting those pieces as we go along with Supergirl next year, Clayface, the Lanterns TV show in the spring. We already know that Peacemaker 1 and 2 are part of this combined universe. Creature Commandos is part of this world. Blue Beetle kind of maybe sort of is.
I've heard they're back and forth on that. I've heard they were going to move it to a TV show.
They're doing an animated series. And the kid who played, and I apologize, I can't remember his last name,
but Zolo.
Yeah, and I apologize that I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Miguel from Cobra Kai.
Yes, okay,
for
Miguel
those of you
Cobra
who
Kai.
Know,
he's going to voice Blue Beetle. And
he was great.
Yeah,
I loved him as Blue Beetle.
I loved, you know, I'm a big Blue Beetle guy, but Ted Kord was my Blue Beetle growing up.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
But you know, new generation. I'm happy. DC is all about. Oftentimes,
that's
passing,
another show you
passing
need to
that
watch.
Mantle along.
Get on Cobra Kai. What you just admitted a couple hours ago that you have nothing to watch now
in terms of television.
Exactly, I'm helping you along there.
That's why I was going to do my Downton rewatch.
I would rather you watch Cobra Kai because you've already done Downton.
Okay, we'll see.
Just go through the movies of Downton, and I'll call it.
Okay, but. So you're piecing these things all together. Oh, and of course, James Gunn's The Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in retrospect, it was obvious that the tone of that film, which embraced a lot of goofy silver and bronze age concepts from DC, like Polka Dot Man, Rat Catcher.
I loved David Zaslav.
He's great,
Polka Dot Man.
And some, and, you know, and a crazy alien villain like Starro.
Yeah, by the way, what the hell? Another fucking kaiju?
Yeah. James loves his kaiju.
Yeah, I noticed.
But, you know, but he takes all of these things and, yeah, they're kind of silly on their face, but he still takes them, not like po-faced, you know, super seriously, but he at least treats them kind of with respect, but still has fun with them.
Yeah,
and
I would agree with that.
And that's the same tone we get here. We've got, you know, kaiju. We've got businessman / scientist Lex Luthor, who's obsessed with destroying Superman.
I fucking loved Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor. I think for me, he just became my favorite Lex of all time.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that taking Michael Rosenbaum out of the picture because I did not finish Smallville. Mm-hmm. I think I saw a couple episodes on the WB when I was a kid.
Okay.
Whoa. The WB. Oof.
Let's pour one out for the fallen of the WB.
No, that I'm not spilling good whiskey.
That's good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Seeing as how
your carpet thanks you.
Yes, yes, my carpet thanks you. My landlord thanks you. My cleaning deposit thanks you. But where was I on this?
Nicholas Holt is Lex Luthor.
Yeah, but Lex Luthor, you know, he has that obsession of wanting to kill Superman. He comes up with this grandiose plan, again, involving real estate. That's something we can never seem to escape with about Lex Luthor in the Superman movies.
Because I did kind of chuckle. Actually kind of made sense. Though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I really liked it. And as I was watching it, though, and especially towards the end where Lex has his moment, and I don't want to get too much into this and too much into spoilers, but there's, you know, when he's talking about why he really hates Superman, mm-hmm. it was a great acting moment from Nicholas Holt. Holy crap, was he fantastic. Obviously, you know, he totally makes you forget Hank McCoy in the X-Men films, the Beast in the X-Men films.
Well, I was talking to Darren, my husband, on the way up, like a day or two ago. And I said that Rachel Brosnahan was one of the main reasons I was going to see this film. And I was excited to see David Cornsweet get his moment. And he goes, and Nicholas Holt. I go, no. And he goes, what are you talking about? I go, Nicholas Holt is good in anything. He's been in bad movies, but he's never given a bad performance.
That's fair. That is fair. And as he's giving his reason, I started to think about some, you know, and it's comics, writers choose their canon as they go along. Sometimes they'll change backstory and retcon things because it suits the story that they want to tell, and that's mm-hmm. fine, and I'm perfectly good with that. There are some versions of Lex's backstory where his father is incredibly physically abusive, and I was wondering if that version of Lex's life was what Gunn was drawing on when he started to write that speech. Because it really felt like somebody who
it did feel like
needed
someone who
needed validation and needed to be the one in charge because he is afraid to let anybody else be in charge. And
or have anyone have
power over him.
Like the ex-girlfriend.
Yes. That's why he threw the ex-girlfriend into that cell.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. I can mm-hmm. see that. There was a beautiful moment where, and I leaned over to you and I said, I'll save it for the podcast.
Yes.
Because I mainly wanted to see your face.
Uh-oh.
When I said it. Finally, James Gunn and Zack Snyder have something in common with those buildings.
Oh, damn, girl. Except for the fact James Gunn made very clear Metropolis was being evacuated. And I know those two guys are friends. Mm-hmm. In fact,
South Park recently.
Rick and Morty.
Oh, it was Rick and Morty.
It was Rick and Morty this past weekend.
No, South Park's having trouble with the merger.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole
other mess we're not getting into right now.
As Parker and Stone said, that's a whole nother shit show altogether. Yep. I feel bad for those guys. But it did kind of feel like just a little bit of a thumb into the eyeball of, aha,
evacuated. Did they do that earlier on in the movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. And I think, you know, there's a lot of great superhero action in here. Mm-hmm. People were complaining that, it's a Superman movie. Why do we have to have all these other characters? I'm like, well, they're Superman's work buddies. As, you know, Clark Kent has work buddies at the Daily Planet. In fact, honestly, I think the Daily Planet people got short shrift.
They did.
I'm sitting there going, okay, I know Steve Lombard, sports reporter, is a jerk. And Beck Bennett
is
was wonderful.
You know what he reminded me of? Oh, God. What was his name? Dog from Frasier. Dog. Bulldog.
Bulldog. Yes. Yeah,
he was great. That's mm-hmm. who he reminded me of. Sports writer. Mm-hmm. You know, just loud, obnoxious.
We throw out Cat Grant's name. Yay, she's there. Obviously, Perry White.
Wait, that was her name? I didn't even pay attention to her name. Yeah, I was just looking at something else.
Well, yeah.
They made it very obvious.
Distracting though they were. There is...
I can't remember what run it was in, but there's this great one-page sequence where Kat is like throwing herself at Clark, and he makes this oblique reference to the fact that she's had a boob job, and it takes her a second, and then she gets really pissed off and walks away. I'll see if I can find the page has been floating funny. Around online every now and then. I'll see next time I see it, I will definitely forward it over to you. Ron Troop, another reporter at the Daily Planet, is there. He's kind of like brought along in the ship at the end, and he I think has like one or two other lines. And I was kind of like, oh, Ron Troop's a cool character, man. You know, I like him in the comics. You know, I wish they had done anything with him. But it was nice, you know, at least that they included the character.
I have to give props to Eddie Gathegi.
Mm-hmm.
I have been watching him since House and Twilight and X-Men. And I could just keep listing his fucking credits off the top of my head, where he is always just kind of a low-tier supporting character that is very important until they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And here, he's so fucking good as Mr. Terrific. Like, I want more of this mm-hmm. guy. I want his own film or his own show or something.
You never know with whatever Gunn has up his sleeve at this point. Yeah, maybe Guy Gardner is going to show up in the Lantern show next year. Who knows? Fingers crossed.
I think that's already been announced.
Oh, has it? Okay, whoops. There's a few of those announcements I know have slid by me. Granted, we've said we've already had a few things we know are part of this world. But this is like the big introduction. This is the...
Go ahead.
What did you think of this? Is this a DC Comics live action universe that you're going to want to continue to maybe not follow every project, but... this is one that you're the good...
I'm here for this Superman.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What do
there
you think?
There is something that is a particular character that I know that you're dying to talk about, and I'm shocked you haven't brought him up yet.
We'll get there. But I want to ask you, though, so are you automatically
as long as we get less of that character, I'm definitely in for this.
I was going to say, are you definitely in for Supergirl next year?
It's Millie Alcock.
Of course. Okay. Are you interested in the Lanterns TV show? It's going to be more earthbound, kind of like a True Detective mystery.
I liked True Detective because it was Lovecraftian. I'll watch an episode or two.
Okay.
That's the thing. I'll watch an episode or two of anything and then...
Go from there.
Usually I try to give a show four. If it only has eight episodes, I'm not sitting with it for four to get its vibe. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't click within two, I'm out.
Okay.
Because right now, superheroes are not doing it for me. So you need mm-hmm. to have something special to really pop out.
Mm-hmm. That's why...
This had something special.
Yeah, and I think like the Clayface movie is probably going to be a little bit more leaning towards body horror when that comes along, which would be interesting.
I did have problems with this movie. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. What were they?
Talk about him first.
Okay. Yay. Crypto is fun. Crypto is great. Crypto's the best dog ever. He's the bestest boy. I enjoyed the addition of Crypto. He works well in this movie. Again, it's one of those kind of like goofy concepts from the comics that James Gunn just kind of took and said, you know what? We're going to take Crypto and do something fun with him, but it's still going to work. It's not going to seem... It's all fun, but it's never camp. And I thought it worked. I thought he worked well in the movie.
I thought he worked well at certain points. I actually sometimes think that there was too much of Crypto. I think he's there as your comedy fodder. And because... Everyone loves a dog.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like,
apparently,
when Superman woke up, and we're going to keep this as vague as possible about the circumstances of why he was asleep. But when Superman woke up and Crypto was like laying on his chest, I said, aw.
Yeah. Well,
but I was not the only one in the theater. Half the theater said it.
Again, everyone loves a dog.
Except you, I know. You're not a big dog.
It's a cliche. It's a fucking cliche at this point. And and that's why I think Crypto gets as much screen time as he does, is because when the dog is there, guess what? You're ignoring everything else going on.
I don't see his function that way.
Are you being biased?
No.
Okay.
No. All right. He serves a story function.
He does serve a story function. But within that serving a story function, they have to constantly up his antics of he's constantly screwing up because he's a dog.
He's a not well-trained dog. And that's not Superman's fault.
Which we don't find out till the end of the movie. But then if that is the case, it did not work for me because it felt a little too much.
Okay.
I loved Crypto in this. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Even I looked at that scene and I went, okay, that's kind of fucking cute. and if it was a cat, I would have also looked at that and gone, that was really fucking cute. But
yeah, I was going to say, I've seen where you have not been feeling well or you've been sleeping on your couch and
Arthur climbs on my chest.
Yes.
And so that's why I was like, okay, that is really fucking cute. Mm-hmm. I did not awe at it, but I don't awe all the time when Arthur lays on my chest when I'm not feeling good. It's just a case of, I felt Crypto was in this movie a little too much, a little more than he needed to be. That's all I'm saying. What scenes he was in, once he finally clued into what the fuck they needed him to do, he was great.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the lead up to him figuring it out.
Well, that's his character arc.
He doesn't get a character
arc.
Why
can't dogs have a character
arc? He didn't learn anything by the end. He's still the same dog when Millie Alcock comes into the picture.
That's true.
Nothing about him fucking changes. He is I knock you over, I beat the hell out of you because I don't know any better, I'm cute, and then I'll finally walk out with you.
Okay. I know that for me, I thought the script kind of elided over a few things. There's a reveal, and then suddenly Superman's saying, oh yeah, the Department of Justice wants to arrest me. You know, I felt like there should have been a little bit more of something in between those two moments. It felt like we just kind of hopped right there, and we hopped through like 12 hours because it was suddenly night when he's talking to Lois and he says that.
Yeah, that scene bothered me, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How come?
Well, talking it over with a friend, they brought to light something that was bothering me about that scene, and I couldn't figure out what it was. It's the fucking kaiju in the background.
Well, the Justice Gang was fighting it.
Why did it need to be there?
Just that this kind of stuff happens all the time, and he's usually out there doing this. So it's unusual for him to be away from that moment.
We could have seen that on the television before he shut it off. It did not need to be there the entire fucking time.
Okay, that could be just James Gunn thinking it's funny to have it out there. Okay, you know, and you're right. Maybe it doesn't need to be there.
It pulled focus. It did. And that was a beautiful scene.
Okay. No, I think you have a point there.
So there is something about the parents I think is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The juxtaposition between Jor-El and his wife, which, by the way, I can't remember the actress's name, but Clementine from Westworld as his mother. Props to her, man. That's a great role to have. Even if you don't have much to do or much to say, you're standing next to Bradley Cooper and you are becoming a very iconic character. And then you have the two actors playing. Is it Martha?
Martha and Jonathan, yes.
Something bothered me all the way here about that section. Great juxtaposition, terrible programming. And I did mention to someone before the movie that there is a great story to be told here of nature versus nurture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's definitely one of the ideas this film is playing with.
But using There's a constant repetition of play the footage of his parents. It soothes him. And then they have him lay on pretty much like a gurney while he's mm-hmm. healing from whatever battle it is. And the images are either playing around him or the message is playing so he can constantly hear it, like a mantra.
Yeah.
That almost becomes a type of visual and audio programming or brainwashing. I looked at that and I was like, ooh. And maybe it's because I was unrelated watching the opening credits to Black Widow this morning. That when you think about it, after a while of hearing something when you're in a twilight zone mm-hmm. or seeing something when you're in a twilight zone, it imprints itself in the back of your mind. And so you make your decisions based off of that.
I look at it as a weird that recording that he of his parents that he listened to over and over again. It's very much implied that he has been. I feel like that feels very much in simpatico with what his Earth parents, Jonathan and Martha, were kind of raising him.
That is a beautiful scene, by the way, on the farm.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I even that nearly choked me up.
And so they, I think they both kind of work, and then, there's a reveal later on, but I think it's like, oh yeah, and that's when the nature versus nurture question comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And we understand where Lex falls on that, because the second he discovers this secret, he, immediately, it reinforces his own.
We're giving you the world versus we're giving you nothing. You have to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
I have one last, and this is very minor, but it stuck out in my head like a sore thumb when I saw that scene. I did feel manipulated by the movie, by the storytelling, by the score when this happened. During the invasion sequence, the bunch of kids raising the flag of Superman with the score in the background, I got very pissed off.
I could see where you could feel manipulated by that.
Tell me why, and I'll tell you if you're right.
Because I think it very much pulls on the heartstring of kids in peril.
Keep going.
And they were the people at the center of the conflict that no one ever seemed to ask them what they felt. It was, what's the reaction in, the halls of government in the U.S.? What's the reaction with Lex? What's the reaction here or there? And no one ever thought to ask the people who were about to be invaded that Superman had stopped and had become an inspiration to.
Okay, no.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Then explain yourself, ma'am.
I asked, why did I feel manipulated, not why the characters were feeling manipulated. I was feeling manipulated because it didn't feel like a sign of hope for those kids to raise that flag and for everyone to start chanting his name. It felt like a, we fucked up and we need your help. Help us.
I don't think they were admitting to fucking up. I think they're admitting to, we are helpless here. We're just, poor people here who are standing on the border of our country about to be invaded by a very heavily armored military with high-tech weaponry that was all manufactured by Lex Luthor.
Okay. And I said these exact same words about an hour and a half ago. At the end of Braveheart, we feel that the Scots on the front fighting against the English who are about to wage war on them. William Wallace is dead. We are fighting for the ideal that he believed and died for. And you stand with them. Here it is. We liked him while he was there and he helped us. And he was, in a word mentioned to me, convenient. And now he's not here to help us because we turned our backs on him, because we got scared that he might be the one in power and control over us. And now we need his help. So SOS, Superman, come fucking save us.
I don't think the people of that foreign country were the ones who kind of turned their backs on him. It felt very much definitely a media manipulation in the U.S.
It is a media manipulation.
So Lex could have that popular groundswell of support to, you know, say, oh, see, the people don't like Superman. So, you know, to go through his plan to what he does.
Then I feel like that needed to be stated better because it did not earn that score.
Okay. I'm sorry that didn't work for you then.
And the one kid standing alone at that moment, don't tell me with the tears down his face, him chanting that phrase or that word with his eyes shut wasn't a help us, please God help us, please Superman help us, help me.
Yeah, it was, but there wasn't any like, I'm sorry we, you know, turned our backs to you or anything like that there. They just saw him as somebody who was there before, who helped them and repelled an invasion. And, you know, they said, look, they're back. We need your help again.
I don't think that was conveyed properly.
Okay. Well,
it's all right.
I mean, I felt that way because I think overall the story is about, you know, hope and being, you know, every day trying to, you know, do as good as you can.
That's the obvious answer, mm-hmm.
Which,
to a character whose symbol on their chest has quote unquote meant to stand for hope. Of course, that's going to be your first jump because that's how you're programmed to think, because that's what he's supposed to stand for. I look at it like Lex Luthor, like Lois Lane, objectionably. I stand back and I look at the whole thing, and that moment did not feel rightly earned in my eyes.
Okay.
I felt manipulated by our story.
Then this is one of our agree to disagree moments.
That
I guess.
The one moment, if I was in a test screening, I would say, you need to fix something. You need to add something somewhere. It doesn't need to be a visual. It can just be, it could be a news footage clip of people earlier on, like kids running around pretending to be Superman in that country because they idolize him.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me that. Give me a newsreel clip or something of them playing. And that way, when this moment happens, it feels earned. We've never seen anything from that country until they're standing on their border. We've heard they get invaded a lot. We hear that everyone is pushing them back, but we never see or actually hear from anyone in that country until they're standing on, we see footage of them standing on their border.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the Superman we need right now, culturally? Because I think yes.
He does have a lot of joy, which mm-hmm. is something that I think has always been missing. I love Man of Steel, and I will admit I actually really only went to see Man of Steel because Russell Crowe was in it. I was happy for Henry Cavill, but mm-hmm. I went for Russell Crowe.
I think the Krypton stuff was probably the best part of Man of Steel, but
I think he's fun. He needs a little more grounding in certain aspects. I think the comedy was a little too strong in areas where it didn't need to be, but overall, there's a light here. And if you're going to see this movie, one of the presidents looks like a Russian version of Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, did you not catch that?
The president of the invader country?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like Rodney Dangerfield,
but in the eyes.
With a fright wig.
Fright wig? I was thinking Albert Einstein wig, but yeah.
It was a little thinner than Albert Einstein's hair, but...
Fair.
Yeah. I think, yeah, this is a kind of it's almost a radical idea. It's almost punk rock, if you will.
That was the best fucking line in the movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Best line.
That, you know, performing an act of kindness just because you can, you know, and
trying to make the world a better place in whatever increment you can, whether it be small or whether it be large. I mean, yes, he stopped, you know, a country from invading another country. He also saved a squirrel. So
I like the squirrel moment. That, yeah. You're right. That so, the squirrel moment was a beautiful thing.
I think that sums up the character altogether. That, you know, he's just out there trying to do what he can do with what he has. And I think, you know, kind of a bit more callous time in our history right now, I think. And I don't think when Gunn first wrote this script like 5-6 years ago, that he anticipated all of this, but it does kind of line up fairly nicely.
It does, but it's also so, if you are teetering around what I think you're teetering around, mm-hmm. yes, it does line up nicely, but in 20 years, it'll just be a good story.
True. And to draw a parallel, in the mid-1970s, America was feeling bad about itself. We had a lot of morally complex gray films where there were no good guys because we were still kind of hurting from Vietnam and Watergate and everything. And then along came this little movie with like gung-ho swashbuckling heroes and very booable bad guys and villains. And it was called Star Wars, and it was a huge hit. So,
that's one thing
we
that
don't
James
remember
Gunn
that
does
setting
very
now.
Well.
We just look back at Star Wars and go, that was an awesome movie.
But no, I think Guardians was fantastic. I loved Peacemaker. I don't want to say whatever James Gunn touches turns to solid gold. It's not gold that really appeals to me, but man, does it make me feel good when I sit down and watch one of his movies. Sometimes it's the break that I need from all the craziness of the world. It's very rare when I actually want to do that, mm-hmm. but when I do, I never regret it.
And I think, though, that's a good place to wrap this up for this episode. James Gunn's Superman is opening in theaters this weekend. And I would say just based on the early projections, a lot of people are going to see it right away. But
the theater was packed tonight.
I know. I have a feeling that it's going to have a lot of repeat business as well. So yeah. It's going to be around. It's going to have a good run, which is nice to see for the theater business, too.
Yes. Remember, you can find us online at bigpicturepod.com, or we are now available on iTunes and Google Play. So either use the link in the show notes post or head directly to our website and search and hit subscribe.
We'll be back next time with something else to talk about.
Hopefully Cobra Kai.
Yes, maybe.
Long time coming.
And then the studio in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And a whole bunch of other stuff.
Thank you for joining us, everyone. Good night. Good luck. This is Natasha Bogutsky and Rich Trees from the Big Picture Pod signing off. Good night.